Tonight, Pretty Late favorite Paul Farvar rides sidecar as we catch up with Illinois House Leader Lou Lang. Then later, friend of the show Todd Belcour joins the Showcase studio. And finally, it's New Music Monday as we listen to tunes from Mike Muya. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me is comedian Paul Farvar. And Todd Belcour got here earlier, and I said, just come in and sit down and hang out with us. You guys were already talking about the Bears. That's not going well, is it? It's not. It is not. Is that one on? Let me see.
I don't think so.
Let me see. Try. Nope.
Testing.
No.
Testing.
You go ahead. Paul, you're not allowed on the show tonight.
All right. I'm not going to talk.
Let me see. Try again.
He's banned. How about now?
Yes.
There we go.
Now I don't know. I have all the microphones open. I have no idea which one I need. There we go. I'll turn that
one. One of them is me.
One of them is you. And then we're in the Showcase studio upstairs because they are rewrapping the Allstate Showcase studio with some. You know, Craig, can we start the show over again? I'm kidding.
Moving on up.
The Bears game, people seem very disappointed. I don't even look anymore. I can't. It's
painful. Nice now. Now you're not invested. You can go out and enjoy your Sunday. I kind of like it. Like after the first.
Frees you up?
Yeah, I think so. I already kind of was out, but I'm like, I got sucked in after the last game. I'm like, oh, maybe they'll be good. And then you watch the first, that pick off, and then Chris Conte, of all people, who was a former Bear, I was like, all right, I'm done.
You were out?
Well, I'm a huge Cutler fan, or I was.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that you existed. Are you on a mailing list? Cutlerfans.com?
Yeah. I am. I follow him on Twitter. I tweet at him like, I got you, buddy.
And
but no, now I'm done.
He didn't have you, though.
No, he was not on my – and I think he had a bad week where he went out and started talking about the election, which is a polarizing issue as
so
it
did
is.
Jake Arrieta, by the way. Did you see that he tweeted out whether or not the celebrities were going to move?
Right.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a game on Sunday with teammates who probably didn't vote the same way as him.
Oh, good point.
So it's like,
especially if you're changing your jersey next to a guy who's like, really? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder how much that's true at work. You and I were talking off the air about how many people are now saying who they voted for. Because people are processing whether you won or lost, your candidate won or lost. I think people are wearing that. Yeah. So to be in the locker room with a.
Yeah, I'm sure awkward. There was people that were very. Anti-Trump, and many of them were on his offensive line, I'm sure, that they weren't looking out for him. So I don't know. I think it was just a bad move bringing it up.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that's the thing is, and probably right now listeners are like, yeah, don't bring it up. But it's in so much of the news. Well, Todd, you and I met in Springfield last April, as a matter of fact, and you gave me a lot of guidance on how to talk to legislators. And what I've taken from that relationship is to talk to the listeners about how to talk to their legislators. Because I think now, more than ever, people need to be in contact with the people who have more direct effect on their lives, and that's at the state level, at the city level, at the county level. What do you think about that?
I think the most important thing to remember is that the whole notion of civility, which is something that kind of got lost in the course of the election. But anytime you're trying to actually persuade or build a relationship with somebody, that requires a foundation, a base level understanding of civility. So I think when within the whole context of people being passionate or very upset or frustrated or afraid, it's hard to maintain that sort of calm necessary to communicate whatever it is that you're thinking and whatever the lens is that you're speaking with, so you can actually have a clear conversation and make sure that you're on the same page, at least in terms of what you're dealing with, why it's a big problem, and what they can do to solve it.
Yeah, civility is rough this week. I mean, people are looking for a lot of reasons to jump on each other, and I'm just trying to go with kind words. Go with kind words and see how that works out for you.
Yeah, or the silver lining. Yeah, look for silver lining in everything.
Yeah,
that's right. But you're right. There's no question that people have kind of re-entrenched themselves in whatever the corner may be, and so they're more defensive, more hypersensitive than they may normally be.
Right. Oh, I agree. People are, even if they're celebrating, they seem to be. I think my son showed me one of the weirdest memes, and he said it was people waving the Confederate flag telling Hillary supporters to get over it while waving the Confederate flag. And he goes, do they get that that is ironic?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, when my 13-year-old son is showing me pictures like that.
The Joe Biden memes, though, are making me happy.
Oh, they're cracking me up. Esmeralda,
I've some of those. Can you cue one of those up?
Have you not seen the Joe Biden memes?
I've been a little bit under a rock the last couple of days trying to catch up on some deadlines.
Oh, they're and now, but today the new thing. Esmeralda, have you seen the Joe Biden memes?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm loving them.
Is it relating to he wish he had run for office? Something
no,
like that?
No, no, no. I'll show you some. They're made up dialogues. Go ahead, Esmeralda.
It's him wanting to play pranks on Donald Trump.
A lot of stuff.
Like, let it go. Just so many funny dialogue where they're just walking. And
well, today the thing that's circulating on Twitter, did you see this, Esmeralda, that Joe Biden, young Joe Biden was hot and there's all these women like lusting after the young Joe Biden?
I can believe that. I mean, he's still a good looking guy.
I agree.
I've been watching this is old, but it's Obama, what is he going to do afterwards?
Oh, yeah.
And it's him doing that video and it's Joe Biden putting on the aviators.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, Joe Biden.
She's not talking about young anything. She's talking about Joe Biden right now.
Right now. No, and I think that's for real. We are coming up after this break. We are going to talk to Leader Liu Lang. I'm headed down to Springfield to find out how the dust has settled and what's going on at the state level. Because I think now, as I was mentioning, now more than ever, it's time to be involved. If you were angry and at this election, I think a lot of people were angry whether they won. If they won, that's why they voted in a particular way. They want things to change. But you can do that anytime before, in between elections. There's another one coming up in 2 years and obviously another one in 4 years. But why let the anger build up? This is what I want to know from everywhere, from Peoria to Indianapolis. We've got, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, down to Carbondale. We've got, you know, we know you're all over the country. You're listening. And we got calls last week from Georgia. And I want to know, I want to talk about how to reach out to your legislators, to your aldermen, to your council people, wherever you're living, to your city mayor. Let's, you know, stay involved. Don't let this be something that builds up and know what's going on in your community. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me here is Paul Farvar, who is a comedian and also knows a little bit about the law, I would say, somewhat. Also joining me in studio is Todd Belcour, who is the executive director of a non-for-profit called Social Change and a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. On the line with us is Leader Liu Lang, who I will be seeing this week because I'm heading down to Springfield, as is he. Hi, Leader Liu. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm well. It's been a long week, and I'm guessing you've had a lot of interesting discussions since last Tuesday.
There have been quite a few, yes.
Well, first of all, let's start with what's going on in Springfield. What is the veto session so that people understand?
So we spend all spring working on bills, and quite a few of them pass, and the governor has the option of signing them or vetoing them or partly vetoing them, which is what we call an amendatory veto. And during the fall veto session, we have an opportunity to address those vetoes, whether to agree with them or override them. There may also be other legislation, new legislation that hasn't been voted on yet that we can take up while we're here.
And what have you been hearing in the last week because one of the really important elements, I think, to learn from this election is, as we've been trying to share with our audience, is it's important to be in communication with your legislators, with your state representatives, with your state senators. And again, with us is Leader Liu Lang, who is a leader of the House in the Springfield, the House of Representatives. And what are you hearing from constituents after last week's election?
Well, first of all, they're worn out. It was a very long election process, a very long election season, and many of them, of course, are disillusioned. In my district, we had a very heavy turnout, but as you know, nationally, the turnout was not as high as we would have liked, certainly on our side of the aisle. It's very clear that Hillary Clinton, our Democratic candidate for president, was not able to turn out as many votes as President Obama did, and that led to her defeat. And so a lot of Democrats are talking about how that happened, what to do about it in the future, and I think it's going to create a new level of activism within our party. Obviously, there's been a new level of activism in the Republican Party, and all that in the end will be good for America and good for Illinois.
Are you hearing from any constituents? I know that you represent the area that includes Lincolnwood and Skokie. Is that correct? Niles as well?
That's correct. I have a little of Morton Grove and a little chunk of Chicago, the 50th Ward as well, Rogers Park.
And what's your district, just so people know?
District 16.
District 16. Because I'm wondering if there are people calling you that are afraid, that are worried about their future as a result of this election.
Certainly, there's a lot of that. If you're a minority, Jewish, Muslim, African-American, Hispanic, even Asian, you have a concern about the kind of rhetoric that we heard during the campaign. You have a right to be concerned about the kinds of appointments that President-elect Trump is making. And people are very concerned. I have tried to alleviate their fears by saying we have to keep an eye on all of this. But in the end, America has endured good and bad presidents. And none of us hope Donald Trump will be a bad president. Even those who worked vigorously to defeat him will hope he's a good president. There's much to be concerned about, but as long as we keep our eyes open and our ears open and express ourselves to our leaders and our leaders express our will, I think this can work out.
Do you get the sense that, because I'm sure that there were also Republican voters in your district, as I know that in the far northwest side of Chicago, there are areas of the Chicagoland area that went red, and you know, most of the outside of the city of Chicago, a huge Trump turnout. Is there a way, I mean, do you think that there are constituents who avoid contacting you because they're like, well, he's not going to listen to us. I'm a Republican, you know, I'm not going to bother calling Leader Lou. Do you ever have run into that?
I'm quite sure that's true, but the fact is that most legislators within degrees are open to everybody. In fact, I open myself up to people out of my district as well. My title is state representative. I have a responsibility to those, whether they're in my district or outside of my district, whether they support my party or they don't, to listen. And I try to do that. And I think most legislators do. There's this thought that people in public life are hunkered down and not caring and not listening. I don't find that to be the case. Certainly there are legislators that are better at their job than others. Certainly there are those who are more open and gregarious, out there than others. Certainly most legislators I know do their best to listen to all points of view and try to take that information in as they make decisions.
Well, because one of the reasons I ask is I had spoken to Representative John Cabello on Friday, who represents the area near Rockford, and he said he's not hearing from any constituents who are afraid. And in fact, he said people who are afraid are being ridiculous. And that kind of, I thought, was a little bit harsh because, and he's not alone. Obviously, there are a lot of people who are celebrating, who, you know, are calling a lot of people whiny and crybabies, not quite understanding the fear that some people have, whether it's, you know, individuals who have come here, have created a life, and are afraid that their parents might be deported or they might be deported, or Muslims who are concerned about their own safety, whether it's just walking down the street, or what does it mean for people like them trying to come into this country to save their lives?
This fear doesn't come from no place. The rhetoric in the campaign was very harsh. The rhetoric in the campaign was pretty frightening for those who came to America to escape tyranny, to those who came here looking for a better life. Some of the rhetoric in the campaign was very difficult to listen to. And I've heard from various different constituencies that would have reason to be concerned about the rhetoric. Now, there may be coming out evidence that the rhetoric will not match the actions, but we don't know that. And so there will be those who are concerned. If the rhetoric during the campaign was not as strong and aggressive as it was, then people would be addressing their concerns about the election of Donald Trump in a different way. And so I think in a real way, while I may not like the result of the election, it seems to me that we have more Americans listening to what's going on than ever have before. Some responded in one way, some responded in another. But it's actually a good thing that Americans and people living in America have taken notice of the commentary during the campaign of the candidates. It's actually a rare thing, and it may lead us to a better place.
Well, Leader Lou, I want to thank you. And when we post this podcast, I'm going to go ahead and attach the phone number to your office, if you don't mind, so that people know where to reach you. As you mentioned, you open your office to all Illinoisans as a state representative, and I appreciate that. I'll probably do the same with Representative John Cabello's podcast as well, so people know where to reach out. Because I do think one of the gaps we have, in particular in Illinois, and this is, seems to be true as a result of the election that we've seen, the disparity, the sort of distance, you know, whatever that is, between the urban areas and our rural areas. I know that there's a little bit of contention between Chicago and downstate. And I think we need to find a way to make everyone feel like they are part of Illinois.
So I've been a member of the Illinois House for 29 years. And for that entire time, and probably long before I was here, there has been a wall, if you will, between upstate and downstate, between Cook County and the rest of the state. And that's unfortunate. Because while we may have different views on some very important issues, we all want to educate our children. We all want our communities to be safe. We all want people to have good, high-paying jobs. We all want to be able to take care of our parents when they need it. And so we have a lot in common, and we spend so much time talking about our differences that we don't spend enough time talking about what we have in common so that we can move forward together to fix some of those things that we can agree on. And if we can start doing that, some of those differences will start to look not so great.
Thank you so much, Leader Lou. I think that we need to keep having conversations like this. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the floor of the House.
Stop by. I'm glad to see you, Patty, and thanks for having me with you tonight.
My pleasure. Again, that's Leader Lou Lang from the 16th District. We will post the podcast along with information for his office so you can reach out. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. Hey, everybody. I hope you're having a lovely evening, and we are broadcasting from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me in the Allstate Showcase Studio is comedian Paul Farvar. We just had a show at Zany's tonight. Also joining us is Todd Belcour, who is the executive director of the non-for-profit organization called Social Change. He's also a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. And yes, Todd, we had a show at Zany's, and Paul and I feel like people are ready to start laughing this week. And if you wonder why people weren't ready to laugh last week, then we had a different week than you did. I think that Leader Lou Lang is onto something, that it was exhausting regardless of where you fell on the political spectrum. I think that it was a very strange year, and comics don't quite know where they fit into this yet.
I did shows the Wednesday and Thursday right after the election, and I think just people were burned out, like he said. I think that people weren't ready to laugh, or they were exhausted, or they just didn't want to deal with it, mm-hmm. or they forgot about the election, and they're like, oh, we have tickets for this thing on Wednesday. Wednesday and Thursday were tough. People were laughing, though, tonight, and this weekend, people were laughing again.
I agree. Tonight's show, I was surprised. It was a great turnout for Kevin Naughton's Snapshots. Yeah, and it was they were in a good mood. And it was a wide range of comedy. A little bit of a conversation about the political season, but not that much, really. We did have a comedian who is what did he say? He was a black Republican atheist?
Yeah.
So that was my Lyft driver, by the way.
Was he gay as well?
I don't know.
Didn't cover that part.
My Lyft driver was who is black tonight was telling me why he thinks this is a good thing for the country to have Donald Trump as far as small businesses go. It's funny. One of the things that you talked about, Paul, is the foreign affairs aspect of this. I think we're all kind of like drilling down to what this is going to mean day by day. You know, he's already said that he's going to leave much of the elements of Obamacare in place, which include the pre-existing conditions as well as children who live with their parents to the age of 26, which happen to be two of the most expensive elements, which probably mean subsidies as well as the mandatory insurance.
Yeah. People forget he was actually for universal health care not that long ago.
So he might amend it, but he's not going to get rid of it.
And he was a Democrat at one point, too. I listened to his 60 Minutes thing yesterday, and I was definitely scared when he was elected. I'm not going to lie. But the more, maybe it's the time thing, and maybe it's just me being overly optimistic or naive. I'm getting less and less scared, especially with some of the stuff he's kind of backtracking on. The one thing, though, that still scares me is the foreign affairs stuff, because that's where, you know, depending on who he picks is to help him with Secretary of State stuff, that's going to be where his mind is. I think he's a snake oil salesman, and he he won. It's well, crazy.
And if, for people who like roll their eyes at that part, I mean, for all the within a week of what he campaigned on, which was throw out Obamacare, and then to say no, we're right. going to keep them, and you know, and as far as gay marriage goes, he says he it's the Supreme Court has already decided on that. He will not work toward repealing it.
Right. There's a lot of reasons not to be scared. I mean, I say he's a snake oil salesman if you're a Trump fan. I mean, Bill Clinton was a career, an amazing politician, too. I mean, it's a
snake
concept.
Oil. You're right. He was a snake oil salesman as well. It's hard. That's a tongue twister.
And I thought he was. It's you know, maybe he's not as bad as people think. I don't know. We'll see. I was scared. My scare level has lessened. Did I use that right?
It's diminished. Has lessened,
I like
I think.
The way it sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, has lessened.
Well, you used Nutella as a verb today. So.
I did. I crossed it so I can Nutella.
At the show. Yeah, there you go. So I think I can use it lessen the way I did.
But, I think you're right. Todd, what are your thoughts? There's a lot of ground we just covered.
No, absolutely. I think to add to that, Trump is doing a lot to distance himself from actual electioneering Trump, and I think that's interesting. One of the things he just introduced recently was the whole notion of creating a new deal for Black Americans. And
had he mentioned that before before election day?
He mentioned in passing the whole notion of creating some sort of effort to really focus on making inner cities vibrant again. But that seemed more like pandering in that instance. But the fact that he's even addressed something as explicit as saying creating a new deal for Black Americans, my friends and I were already joking, that kind of gives him automatic Hall of Fame jacket material because no one's really even mentioned with that level of specificity.
And explain to listeners and to who might not be familiar with the New Deal entails, because the New Deal under Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a huge injection of money and money for infrastructure, whether it was the Tennessee Valley Association to bring electricity to parts of the country that did not have it, Hoover Dam, which created, again, the possibility to have the West Coast really as vibrant as it is today. So, I mean, if he's talking about doing something as a magnitude of that level, that's interesting to me.
Absolutely. And I think it just goes to the general point is he gave so few specifics outside of the kind of outlandish items about building walls and things of that nature. You really don't know how he's going to govern. And one indication certainly is who he appoints. But I think he still feels like he needs to prove his conservative credo by virtue of who he appoints. So I'm more interested in hearing more things like he did on the 60 Minute special and hearing more about his actual thoughts about the trajectory of this country based on his leadership.
Right. And that was the thing, too, I think a lot of people were talking about as far as the tone. Right. And President Obama mentioned this today, that he can, by example and who he appoints, show how much he wants to bring this country back together again, because we are. I don't know how divided we are when 25% of the country is voting. The voters elected him, because really, when you break down the numbers, it's 25%.
Yeah. He had less. He had less votes than McCain and Romney. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, and this is a very good question from a listener in the 847. Why should we believe what Trump is saying now any more than we believe what he was saying before? And I think there's no reason to believe. There's reason to be diligent, to hold him accountable and the people that he appoints. And again, your Congress, all your legislators, your local officials, as Leader Liu said before the news, call his office. If you live in the state of Illinois, call the legislators, the leaders in your area. But I'm sorry that I think that that he has the ability. I think I would think he has the ability to unify people in the same way he divided. Don't you think? With that, I would hope.
Yeah.
I mean, he has the potential, maybe.
Well, yeah. By being the most powerful person in the world, you generally have the power to do whatever it is that you put your heart and mind to.
Interesting.
And I think he is concerned as a businessman, otherwise, and just how he's perceived. I mean, I think over time he recognized normally people turn to the center for the general election, but I think he's going to pivot to the center after he's elected. But that being said, I think all the concerns that are well-grounded based on his rhetoric and saying negative things about people of color, minorities, immigrants, Muslims, I think that gives people pause to even have any faith or belief that he's going to do the things he says he's going to do. But the proof will be in the pudding, and I think the fact that
there's so much pudding. Why is everyone saying pudding this weekend?
I'm so hungry.
It's like the
now.
Same. By the way, can I just say that pudding and butthurt are the two words that I don't understand how the two things that have that,
those
that,
are two
that,
separate. Concepts.
I understand that, but people are saying the proof is in the pudding, and that Hillary supporters are butthurt. And if someone who uses that over and over again could explain to me exactly what it means, if you're using that, I want you to call or text right now and tell
pudding?
Me in exact words what that means to you, because
Which
I have
one?
It's so bizarre. Not pudding. I don't understand why this is like so prominent in social media and conversations.
Brought that one up, though.
I don't know why. I know, but you said pudding, and I'm thinking about like I feel like everyone got the same memo on either side. Like you guys say pudding, and you guys say butthurt, and I'm just tired of it. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour, the executive director for non-for-profit organization called Social Change. He is also a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. Joining me as well is comedian Paul Farvar. We just appeared at Zany's on Wells in Old Town as a part of Kevin Naughton's show, Snapshots, and it was a fun show. We were happy to make people laugh tonight. And it was cathartic for me, too. I told a few stories. I'll put that like in an essay without some of the language.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I make fun of, look, I am not a prude by any means. I think anyone that listens to the show, but I don't, the language that's being used to people expressing themselves on social media, because I really don't understand why butthurt comes into the conversation. They say that. They're telling people who are afraid and scared and disappointed, they're saying that phrase on toward them. And I guess they're saying, people are saying, well, when Obama won, you know, we were upset and you guys made fun of us. I mean, there is an official in West Virginia who says that she tweeted out that she's excited. The mayor of a town, Clay, is it Clay County, West Virginia? I'll pull it up. This is not something I'm making up. There's actually a petition out to have her removed from her position. She said that she's looking forward to having a classy lady like Melania Trump be first lady because she is tired of seeing an ape in heels. So let that hang there for a moment.
No yes. way.
Yeah, that happened.
No, that's legit.
That's legit.
Elected official. But I think they've already got...
No, yeah. That's her... That's the... she has not been removed because she's elected. A Clay official loses her job. So she's an official at the Clay County Agency, but she's not the woman who tweeted it out. I'm not sure if she had also done similar things.
Right. So people are butthurt about that. That's the correct way of using it.
They're
that they're butthurt about her tweet.
About her tweet. Yes.
Butthurt speaks more to, you know, when you're upset when you shouldn't be.
Oh,
but what
is it?
But why is it? I mean, like, is it because you have a pimple there? Like, so it hurts when you sit down? Like, why? I don't know. 312-981-7200. If this is a phrase that you use, run it past Craig first and let me know if you can explain it to me. Maybe Joe knows. Hey, Joe, do you understand where that phrase comes from? Hey, Joe.
Compadre.
Hey
listen, I got to give you a kudo because I remember you roughly a year ago were one of the few prognosticators who indicated that Trump might have a chance.
No. I think Craig will go to the record and say that I feel very strongly that this man could be our next president.
Okay, good. Well, you know, I think you have a sense, put it
yes.
that way.
Of but anger. Do you remember why I said there are people who are angry, and I see them on social media. They call into the show. They text us.
Yeah.
There's a lot of anger, and I saw him tapping into that the very first day, Joe. Yeah. The very first day when he said all the things he said about illegal immigrants, about crime. That was I knew that day that this was entirely not just possible, but approachable.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Back to your initial central point there. The butthurt, I'd never heard that before. So listening tonight, it's a revelation.
Don't Google it.
But it's an easy, you know, transition. It's a diplomatic saying, a pain in the derriere.
There you go.
There's
is that
no
what
two
is?
Ways about it. But here's two things that, you know, have patience, look for a turnaround. Because a couple things are going to happen, hopefully, that he promised. And if they do, you're going to see so many dollars available for infrastructure, for taking care of your kid, you know, where money should be spent, beyond belief.
It's the 15%. Go ahead. What was the...
15% plus the 10% repatriation rate for the roughly, you know, conservatively, $2 to $3 trillion overseas right now. Because companies don't want to pay the 35% to bring their profits home to reinvest here.
Okay.
Simply put, between those two things, you're going to have money out the gazoo.
So when he has the repatriation and he has this the stimulus for them to invest, is there some sort of accountability that they are actually following through and not just, you know, spreading the, you know, whether it's golden parachutes or other kinds of bonuses? I mean, what are the sort of requirements in place that is going to be used the way it's intended?
Superbly put, because the addition to the stimulus package was spent previously. You know, I don't know where it was spent. You'd need a grand jury to ascertain that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the accountability factor? I'm putting trust in a businessman to make sure it goes to the right projects. Shovel Ready, I remember that. What a laugh. None of it went to construction. Virtually none that I've been aware of myself. So is there
why can't they, Joe, why wouldn't they be able to put that, Todd, is there a way to put that into, you know, if you take advantage of this 10% repatriation bill, that then there has to be, you have to demonstrate that that money is being used for reinvestment into works and shovel-ready projects or other things of that nature.
Certainly.
Precisely. You're asking for accountability, which is entirely valid, okay?
Yeah.
Very valid. I'm saying put your trust in them, see what happens. Wait and be cautiously optimistic. Well, not even cautiously. Be optimistic.
We say, Todd? One second, Joe. 1 second.
I think to your point, though, I mean, given the concern that you had that previously money has been spent
frivolously.
In a way that hasn't, frivolously or not necessarily to the most effective means.
Right.
I think we should learn from those past errors and now make sure that it's very particular criteria to ensure that the money is being infused in the places where it can get the most bang for its buck and the most return on investment.
We need to be scrupulous in paying attention to the minute details of how
right.
that is.
Because otherwise, Joe, you're saying that we trusted them before, but we should trust them again this time.
A different
correct?
Group of people.
Which,
like
which
one
people?
One of the things Trump was called out about, saying something like the generals don't know what they're doing.
Wait. Which people? Which? How are the corporations different now than the corporations were the last time?
Our corporations, you have a different president, different chamber of commerce, if you will. And you'll have different people keeping a watchdog effect on it.
But I think what Patty is saying is the issue is that companies generally find whatever mechanism they can to avoid having to pay taxes, avoid having to invest any of their money in things that they may not choose to. So how, even under President Trump, will they now be compelled to do things they've been avoiding, you know, the responsibility of doing over the last 50, 60 years?
Question is valid, but I think the people that will be in charge now will be accountable to a person who is a supreme businessman. You've got to give them that.
So you're saying put our trust in a businessman that businesses will do what's best for the country. I'm just trying to play this out because I believe when the stock market really exploded, the recession that we had in 2008, even Alan Greenspan said, what I didn't take into account was greed. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is Monday, which means it's Music Monday on our show. And we are thrilled to welcome to our studio Mike Muya. And here he is playing Honey on Toast.
If I come around, would you be my baby? If I come around now, would you be mine? Tell me. I wanna know, yeah. I wanna know, baby, yeah. If I come around, would you be my baby? If I come around now, would you be mine? Tell me. I wanna know, yeah. I wanna know, baby, yeah. Would you love me till you cannot breathe? Would you love me till death do us part? Would you love me till you can't love no more? Tell me. I wanna know, yeah, yo, I wanna know, baby, yeah. If I was strung out, would you come and fix me? If I was lost, would you come and find me? If I was broken, would you put me together? Tell me. I wanna know, yeah. I wanna know, babe, yeah. Would you love me till you cannot breathe? Would you love me till death do us part? Would you love me till you can't love no more? Tell me. I wanna know, love. I wanna
breakfast, honey on toast, is what you are, babe, to me, babe. Buttercup for breakfast, honey on toast, is what you are, babe, to me, babe. Would you love me till you cannot breathe? Would you love me till death do us part? Would you love me till you can't love no more? Tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me. I wanna know, love, I wanna know, babe, yeah, yeah. I wanna know, babe, but I got for breakfast a honey on toast. But I got for breakfast honey on toast. It's what you are, babe. Yeah. It's what you are, babe. Yeah. It's what you are, babe. It's what you are, babe.
Yeah, that's Mike Muya with Honey on Toast. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We're upstairs today because they are wrapping the studio downstairs with some just some new decorations and stuff. And I think Christmas is coming too. They're going to do that. Hey, Mike, grab a seat over here. I'm going to turn off the Facebook Live. I hope I should have asked you first if it was okay if I videotaped you for Facebook Live.
No, that's all right.
Is that all right? Yeah. Great job. How'd that feel?
Yeah, it felt interesting.
Why did it feel interesting?
I haven't played in a minute, so...
I know, that's what you were telling me in the green room. You have not played in a year.
Yeah, in a year.
And so we've booked you and you come in and played on the air for listeners in 38 states and Canada, as well as online. So
thanks.
Should I
didn't tell me that before.
I know. I'm telling you now, though. So you haven't played... Why haven't you played in a year?
It was kind of like... Because I was living in Boston before, and... Mm-hmm. I got here in 2015, and I just kind of wanted to, you know, redefine myself and change styles. And I've been writing a lot and, you know, making beats and playing the blues. So I kind of, you know.
Well, that's what I was thinking was how much it struck me. It was a really, almost like rockabilly blues was what that felt
like.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a combination of a little of like acoustic funk with blues.
Okay.
And yeah, it's certainly.
Is it offensive if I say rockabilly? Is that
No.
Okay,
it's music.
Just checking. Okay.
You know,
I wasn't sure.
I'm cool with it.
I don't know. With comedians, we cringe sometimes when people say your little skit, your little skits. What do you do in your little skits?
It reminded me of G Love a lot. I like it had like a G Love vibe to it. I don't know if I just dated myself, but do you know who G Love is?
No, I have no idea.
Oh man, I thought I was
when he
cool.
When you hit you with that, oh yeah, I was like, oh, he's
another somebody. All right, I'll just shut up. But. Just a reoccurring theme on Mondays, his music right there would really sound good with some djembe.
A little djembe?
Because I am a djembe player, and I should have told you, I would have given you my clips of my djembe solos.
He's trying to audition for every musician we have every Monday. You
know, I'm glad you mentioned djembe. He's got his demo CD back there.
I have my bass in the car for the next song, and I don't think they told you that, but I am going to play with you. Is that cool?
Yeah, cool. I mean, if you can find your way around it.
All we have available is probably one of the empty huge jugs for the water, so you'll have to like bang on that for
a djembe.
Bit.
That's cool. how they started.
It's got a lot of bass to it, so.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that'll work. And you said you were living in Boston previously.
Yeah, I'm Boston.
Are you from Boston? Were you born there?
I'm originally from South Africa.
Oh, look out, because I don't know. You might have to go back.
Huh? Oh, no, I'm good.
That was a Trump joke.
That was a terrible Trump joke. Do you have any, how have you lived in the United States?
5 years.
5 years? Yeah. He's like, why are you asking?
No, I'm cool with it.
What brought you to Boston?
Well, first, my wife, she's from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But we first lived in New York for a little bit, and then it got a little expensive. You know, New York is
a little bit, and Boston too.
I know, It is.
But of the three, what are you liking the best so far in
Chicago
your 5 years?
Chicago is a good combination of like the two. You know,
yes,
Boston,
I agree.
And New York had a baby, it would be Chicago.
Oh boy,
yeah, because like you know, Chicago is kind of like the
everyone guys like making these baby references. Paul, you and your Cubs World Series game is like
hey,
having a baby.
It's a true story. It's like raising a child. I'm trying to learn. It's baby steps.
So if New York and Boston had a baby, it would be Chicago.
Yeah,
in the sense, there's a lot going on. It's very vibrant.
Yeah, it's very vibrant. I mean, it's big enough so you don't feel like trapped.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you kind of get time to. I mean, I wouldn't be able to. I feel like I write better songs. I'm a better musician. I'm a better creative living in Chicago than in New York. I was restless.
Okay.
And in Boston, I was just frustrated.
Oh, and so you feel like you have kind of place to spread out a little bit here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like, you know. There's a lot to do here, so you can kind of like enjoy yourself. At the same time, you know, you can kind of like hide in your room and just be creative.
And sometimes that's. Does it depend on what mood you're in when it comes to writing? Do you want to be like in a coffee shop, or do I want to be outside? Or
I like to be in my own space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but alcohol always gives you
a little bit of different inspiration
you need. But like, other than that,
have you ever compared like what you've written sober while having cocktails? I've never thought about this. I mean, like as comedians, you know, there are things I've written down. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, we also perform sometimes after having a couple and we feel a little bit looser or feel like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think like when you're sober. Because, you know, as you get older, you master the art of kind of like keeping yourself together. You
right.
Know? Like, yeah, life sucks, but I got this.
Right.
Really? Because I'm still trying to figure that out. Are
wow,
you sure?
You need some Zen moments with Mike Muya.
No, I don't have it all together. But when you kind of like, you know, you've been drinking, it's kind of like you let go of the crutch and you can walk limp. And for a while,
right? You limp a little bit,
yeah. It's like, yeah, actually.
Well, you limp, but you try to look like you're walking normal.
Yeah,
you know, so no one knows you've been drinking.
It's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I agree that
everything's more
sense.
Interesting with alcohol. I think.
I think you're right about
or not. Or, you know,
well, it depends.
Or substances.
I am on the wagon. I've been on the wagon since Wednesday. Yeah, I'm putting it out there. I have two apps on my phones. I've got my sobriety tools. It adds up how much you're not drinking.
Oh, wow.
So far I've saved like $65 since last Wednesday.
Can I have it?
Yeah. So it's
well, why? I mean,
the
like,
app.
What's
the money? You want my money so you can buy booze?
No. So you could donate to social change.
Absolutely. I could do that.
We get you
some of it for you, some of it for my family. Yes.
But comedians get free drinks at most of shows.
You know how rough tonight was at Zany's? That was rough. That's rough to stand there in your place of employment where part of your pay is booze, and I stood there and did not have any.
I don't drink.
That's not rough. That's
during
awesome.
My sets.
I've been working in that club for 20 years, and it's just like part of my showing up is having a cocktail with my show, and I've decided not to drink.
Wow. So,
for how long
why?
Is this?
I mean,
like, as long as it takes. There's a lot of work to do.
One thing's for sure. You never regret not drinking the next day.
Exactly. I mean, it's hard for me to get through it because it's so habitual for me at Zany's. Yeah.
Unless you didn't go out with your friends who were drinking because you weren't drinking and they told you about the great night they had, which happens to me quite often.
Yeah.
But I don't drink, so that's fine.
That's all good. We were hanging out with Mike Muya. And by the way, for anyone who's interested in
it,
was wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there a website where people can find more of your music?
MikeMuyaOfficial.com.
MikeMuyaOfficial.com. That's MUYA official.com. More music with him and conversation when we come back. Joining me as well is Paul Farvar and Todd Belcourt on 720 WGN. It is Music Monday in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are delighted to welcome Mike Muya to our Monday night special. We love having new artists, and we are thrilled once again to have him play a song. He's going to play Wanting You.
Your hand on a window frame, shoulder cradled on the wall, looking past the dirty blinds and you feel alone. We've had this conversation before, baby. This ain't nothing new to you. I've been missing all the signs of come and go. I know you said I should come find you every time you stand there with a broken heart. I've been getting it wrong, it's not a no. And all of your sorrows will never go in vain. I'm here to break your fall, my love. Baby, you know I just keep wanting you. Baby, you know I just keep wanting you. In spite of the troubles that leads us to our knees. Oh, baby, you know I just keep wanting you. Wanting you. Heavy motions in the room. I'm still trying to pacify. I'm looking for my words, but silence blooms. We've had this conversation before, baby, and it's never fair to you. I've been getting my lines crossed, and that I know. I know you said I should come find you every time you stand there with a heavy soul. I've been getting it wrong, and yes, I know. All of your sorrows will never go in vain. I'm here to break your fall, my love. Baby, you know I just keep wanting you. Oh, baby, you know I just keep wanting you. In spite of the troubles that leads us to our knees. Oh, baby, you know I just keep wanting you. Wanting you. Wanting you.
Thank you.
That's Mike Muya with Wanting You. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And thank you, Bob Ferguson, for once again bringing sweet, sweet music to the airwaves and making them sound as good as they do in the studio. Again, that's Mike Muya. And go to MikeMuyaOfficial.com for more information on his music. That's M-U-Y-A. And yeah, that, so your journeys have taken you from your home. Where where was your home?
It's South Africa, and it's a little beach town. Well, it's not. It feels little, but mm-hmm. it's a surf town.
Okay,
you know, which is.
Do you miss that? The beach living somewhere.
I mean,
like?
I surfed enough.
You almost, surfed enough?
Yeah,
out of your system.
Almost got you know, almost died a couple of times, but I'm okay now.
All right,
I want to chill.
He smiles about it.
He does.
Time.
Yeah,
I almost died. No big
just
deal.
Just tumbled around and caught a wave that was too big and got away from you.
I hit the pier.
Oh, why are you surfing near a pier?
Well, because you know it was cool. The waves were better there.
Okay. I avoid
everyone
any
knows
structures.
That, Patty.
Yes, I didn't. No, I don't surf. I don't. Have you ever surfed, Todd Belcore?
No, I haven't. I'm actually impressed to find someone who has. I've never met anyone who has. That's impressive.
Yeah. I think Craig has surfed, I believe. Craig from the East Coast has done some surfing.
He hasn't claimed that. It's good to know. Yes. Is he surfing near the piers as well? Or what's going on?
Yeah, did
you
surf near the pier in Jersey?
I never surfed into any piers, but I did get stung by jellyfish a lot.
Oh.
That did happen. Well, you're waiting for a wave, Mike, and then you're out there and a jellyfish gets you, but you still take the wave in if it's a good wave.
Yep.
That's what you do.
Jellyfish, too?
I try to avoid when it's certain days where in Durban we had mostly what we called blue bottles.
Okay.
They're just these little stinging. They're kind of like jellyfish, but the burn, you know.
Sure.
It really hurts. So
do you have scars? Do you have any jellyfish scars?
No, I got pier scars.
Pier scars, yes. Yeah. Those would probably be more damaging than the jellyfish. So you get it out of your system with your near-death experiences. Has that ever informed your music, your near-death experience, crashing into a pier?
Yeah, I mean, like...
Just the song called Crashing Into a Pier.
Yeah, pier crashing.
But other than that... Oh, yes. Sorry, Mike.
No, it's cool. You don't really think about it that much. It's, you know, it's different if you were going to work and then, you know, you get hit by a bus and you almost die. But when you go surfing, there's a kind of like a risk you inherit and you're like, okay, it's part of what it is.
Okay, so you have to shake it off otherwise.
Yeah, you shake it off and, you know, the next day, you know, well, not the next day because, you know, it took me a while to heal. But like...
Yeah, back on that board.
Yeah, and then you're back on it, and it's fine. Right. Yeah.
So your journey took you to New York and then Boston and now Chicago.
Now Chicago.
And may I ask what your wife does that has taken you on?
She worked for the Chicago Park District.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to ask you about that later because I have, as well, as we all know, I was a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach.
Oh.
But, as we all know.
Yes, we all know. As we all know, as I talk about constantly on the show. Mike Muya, you can go to MikeMuyaOfficial.com for more information. We'll have a couple more words with him before he goes in just a moment on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining us on the, in studio, we have comedian Paul Farvar, who, by the way, is also an attorney. So is, oh my gosh, wait a minute. All of my guests are attorneys. Todd Belcour, who is a lecturer at the University of Chicago, lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. He's also the executive director of Social Change, a non-for-profit organization. And joining us on the line is the better half of Legal Face Off, Rich Lenkoff. Hey, Rich, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Patty?
I'm feeling overwhelmed and a little intimidated by all the law degrees surrounding me right now. I kind of wish I'd gone to law school.
Way too many lawyers. I know Paul, though. Very funny comedian and good lawyer.
Well, oh, there you go. Look at that. Todd,
thanks,
you not so much.
No, I'm not very funny, but I'm a damn good lawyer.
There you go. Well, there have been developments in the Making of a Murderer case. That's not the name of the case, but tell us a little bit about what's happened in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Brendan Dassey, who was the nephew of the subject of Making a Murderer, he was his conviction was overturned by a federal court judge on Friday. So Making a Murderer, we all, you know, followed it pretty closely. You and I talked about it a few times. The nephew, Brendan Dassey, was convicted along with his uncle, Stephen Avery, of murdering and sexually assaulting a photographer whose remains were found on Avery's property in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And the federal court judge, found that the confession was coerced. It was not voluntary, found that largely because of what we saw in the film, found that the confession was not dependable and that Dassey's Fifth Amendment rights were violated, and so overturned the conviction.
Do you think that he would have had the opportunity to overturn the conviction were it not for the filming of this case?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's pretty unusual for a conviction to be overturned by a federal court, by an appellate court. Usually that happens if there's a witness that comes forward or if there's DNA evidence. In this case, neither of those things happen, but because of the spotlight that the film, showed on this conviction, and specifically the fact that the confession was so questionable. I mean, we saw in the film pretty flagrant violations of this man's, criminal record. For example, we never saw an attorney representing him. The confessions were held without an attorney present, without an adult present. In addition to that, Dassey was, questionably capable of making this confession. He was, I believe his IQ was, between 67 and 71, and generally 70 is the standard by which you can have a reliable confession. So there's a number of issues with it. And yeah, to answer your question, I don't think any of that would have come to light had it not been for this documentary.
Yeah, I almost feel like everyone needs to have a documentary for any court case they're having. I mean, can people go in with like GoPros when they're being tried? I mean, obviously there was a lot more done on this film. There were interviews. It was done in a documentary style. But the filmmakers also kind of had their angle, didn't they?
Sure. I mean, you know, the film generated a lot of controversy on both sides of it. You know, a lot of critics of the film felt that it was very one-sided. It didn't show, you know, all of the evidence, obviously. It didn't show the evidence accurately. So, you know, certainly the filmmakers were criticized as having, you know, having had a very singular view of the evidence and a very one-sided view. But, you know, it turns out that, at least according to this judge, they were right when it came to this particular defendant.
Interesting. Todd, have you followed this story at all?
I have. You know, I went to Northwestern Law, and this is sort of things they work on. Wrongful convictions is one of the cases that they were also working on. So I've had the privilege of knowing a lot of people involved in it.
And why is it so hard to overturn a federal court decision?
Because generally, I mean, go ahead.
You go.
No, sorry. No, you go ahead. The federal court was the court that actually overturned conviction. So it's not that it's that hard. It's just, you know, fairly unusual. Again, without new evidence coming forward. In this case, there was really no new evidence that in terms of, you know, DNA evidence or a witness, but the court relied largely on what we all saw in the documentary and decided that the confession was not voluntary, along with the other issues that I discussed.
So now this was just for the accomplice, right, the guy who had admitted to doing this, or
nephew.
Was the nephew, right?
Yeah, this was the nephew. He was 16 at the time, back in 2005. You know, his uncle was Stephen Avery, who was also convicted. But yeah, Dassey was not the main defendant, but was, you know, certainly at least in the original case found to be involved in the crime.
And you also had sent us some ideas for another story, which was the hot car death developments. Is there a case that has been decided recently in regards to a child left in a car?
Yeah. You know, today the jury in Atlanta, or just outside of Atlanta, found Justin Harris guilty. This is the father of the 22-month-year-old who was found dead in his car seat back in 2014. His father had left him in the car for roughly 7 hours while he went to work at a Home Depot corporate office outside of Atlanta, and he returned to the car and found his son had died from dehydration. He claimed that this was, you know, a mistake. He simply forgot to drop his son off at daycare that morning. Prosecutors successfully, it turns out, argued that he had intended to leave his son there so that he would not have to be a father anymore. You know, there was evidence introduced about him sexting, I think, 6 or 7 women, including one who was underage. One of the texts was just a few minutes before he discovered his son, and you know, the text said something to the effect of, you know, I love my son, but we all need a break at some point. So, you know, pretty damaging evidence. His ex-wife also testified, actually on behalf of the defense, on behalf of her ex-husband. Prosecutors tried to get her to testify, but she wouldn't. So the defense called her, and she testified that, you know, he was a crappy husband, but was a really, you know, excellent father. But despite all that, the jury found, after I think 4 days of deliberation, found him guilty, say, of several counts, including murder.
Wow, these are horrible stories. Because I mean, people, you know, I'm assuming that he just felt like, oh, this happens all over the country. This is a way to sort of cover it up, and I was absent-minded. You know, because you always hear these stories about women just thinking, oh, I'll just run in to get my nails done while the baby's sleeping. And what are I never know what people are thinking. Have you not heard this, Paul?
No, I don't have kids, so I don't
but
know how this works.
But you know, you follow the news.
Yeah, no, I did hear about this story that Rich was talking about. Hey, Rich, by the way.
Hey.
And I didn't know that they convicted him. I thought maybe it would be like accidental because it seems like it could go either way. In terms of intent, but it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, because intent, and this is really weird to talk to so many lawyers
yeah.
in time, right? Because you do have to, like, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he intended for this, that he plotted this out and carried it out. And so is it often when there's a baby or a toddler or a child involved that they will go to the most, you know, the harshest sentencing or the harshest conviction?
Well, in terms of...
In terms of the charges.
Every lawyer is like, I'll take that. No, never mind. I'm in the background.
Patty's going to be ready for the February
bar. Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of the prosecutor's discretion, they generally fix the charges that they think they're most likely to be able to get the person with based on the facts that they have before them and the rudimentary investigation and the discovery that's been performed. But in terms of the sentence, they certainly ask for the largest sentence. They give people generally an opportunity to plead to a lesser crime or maybe a lower sentence on the sentencing scheme. But if people do go to trial, one of the threats that prosecutors make, and they often try to back it up, is if you don't take the deal I have here, then I'll try to throw the book at you. And that's certainly what it looks like it happened in this case, where they look for the outer realm and the greatest possible penalty even within the scheme. So it's unfortunate that that happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, the appellate court didn't see fit to review the facts and really reconsider the actual law as it was applied and find differently.
Interesting. Hey, Rich, do you want to hang on since I have three lawyers on the line with me? Can we talk a little bit about, just going forward in this new, you know, in 2017, what a Trump presidency might mean for laws across the country and the Supreme Court? Do you guys mind hanging out for that, Rich?
Yeah, sounds great.
Have you been thinking about it? Have you been? Is it been, you know, something that's sort of been swirling around in your mind for the last week?
Yeah, you know, on our show on Legal Face Off, we've been preparing for a potential Trump presidency for a while, and we've certainly talked about the list of Supreme Court justice nominees that he put forth a few months ago.
Okay,
we've had our Supreme Court panel, you know, a couple times, and this week we're taping, and we'll have a few Supreme Court. Law clerks or ex-Supreme Court law clerks on to discuss the future of the Supreme Court and, you know, the rest of the judiciary given Trump's presidency. So, yeah, for sure.
All right.
We're covering extensively.
Cool. Hang on the line and we'll talk about that when we come back. That's Rich Lenkov. You can go to WGM Plus to hear Legal Face Off that he hosts every week with Jason Whiteside, fellow attorney. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Todd Belkor. He is the executive director of the non-for-profit organization Social Change. What, am I getting it wrong now? Why are you laughing at me? Wait, hold on a second. Let me turn your mic on.
Just the trepidation that you invoke every time you have to introduce me, it makes me laugh.
So many words. You have more words in your introduction than anybody else that I have in my show ever. He's also a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. We also have Paul Farvar, comedian. See what happens there?
You didn't list all my credits.
Yeah, I'm not going to. And also on the line with us is Rich Lenkov. Also, all three of my guests are attorneys. Paul Farvar is a comedian and attorney. Rich Lenkov is an attorney and the co-host of Legal Face Off with Jason Whiteside. You can catch that every week on WGMPlus.com. Or anytime. You don't have to catch it every week. You can just catch it right now. We are talking about... The specter of the Supreme Court ahead of us as Donald Trump ascends to the presidency. And this is something that has kept a lot of people concerned for a year since Justice Scalia died. I can't commit to anybody's name tonight, Todd Belkor. President Obama put forward a candidate for Supreme Court, Garland. Right, Justice
Garland,
the Congress did not act on it. Right, they did not. Can he? Okay, this is my question, and I want to know for real. Can he dismiss the advise and consent and just appoint, like on January 19th, just go booyah, mic drop? Here's your Supreme Court justice. Anybody?
Well, Congress still has the advise and consent role. I mean, he could, you know, appoint anyone, but according to the Constitution, the Congress has to advisory consent and approve the nomination. So effectively, you can't really get it done without Congress.
Todd, have you looked into this at all?
You know, I mean, there's a precedent for recess appointments being made, but never of the scale of Supreme Court justice. So okay. I think anytime you have instances where it's clear that there's complete obstinance and there's blockage, and it's important for the functioning of the country to have someone in place, there has been precedent for putting someone in place even without going through the traditional means. But that being said, I think the sort of hellfire you would get for doing that in the case of Supreme Court justice would make it really impossible to expect.
And why would you? I mean, he's got complete domination of, you know, the Republicans have a majority in both houses of Congress, so he really doesn't have to. I mean, the Democrats could filibuster, I suppose, and, you know, might do what has been done to them in the past, but I can't see that happening, especially with the first nomination. I mean, Trump certainly has a mandate. Certainly, Supreme Court justice was an issue in the election, and I think the Democrats would be foolish to hold that up, unless, you know, we went with someone who is really incredibly right-wing, which, you know, from his list, it doesn't appear to be that anything really. I mean, there's some certainly controversial picks on there, but I think Trump would probably pick someone who is, you know, definitely approval by the Congress.
Is there anyone that you think is more extreme than Scalia on that list that he had?
There's a couple that are close, you know. They're certainly to the right of center, but, you know, we have to remember that in history, I mean, right now, the justices that are on the Supreme Court are really the only ones in history that have ruled consistent with the president that nominated them. In other words, right now, you've got four liberals, four conservatives, and those fall pretty much in line with who nominated them. But in the past, you know, there's been a long history of justices like, you know, David Souter, for example, who was the first Bush's only appointment to the Supreme Court, who was among the greatest disappointments for Republicans in history because he, you know, consistently ruled in favor of liberal and Democratic causes. So, you know, just because a judge has acted a certain way in the past doesn't necessarily mean they're going to act that way once they're on the bench. You know, Chief Justice Roberts is an example who, on two separate occasions now, has, you know, ruled in favor of Obamacare. So you never know, but according to the list that Trump has put forth, those do seem like pretty reliably conservative would-be justices.
But yeah, like Roberts seemed to be
a good jurist.
Yeah, he's pretty.
I mean, you don't think so? I think that he seems to take the law into account and deliberate on that more so than perhaps people who seem to vote politically. To lean, am I wrong? Why are you laughing at me like that?
I'm just enjoying the game of charades you're playing concurrently as you're trying to describe what you're doing. Your
I'm also reading the Constitution. Article 2, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution reads, "The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session."
That's right.
So I'm just, go ahead. You were saying?
No.
Justice Thomas.
Well, I think that, I mean, like, people, going back to what we were talking about earlier, Patty, I think that Trump's first pick is going to be to replace Scalia. So there is going to be the status quo there. There is the hope that he has a jurist like Roberts who is at least follows the law. I mean, you know, he has good reasoning in his rulings. In terms of it's not, you know, as consistent as you would. He went for Obamacare, for that matter. But the one thing is, you know, is Ginsburg going to stay healthy? And that she only has to wait 2 to 4 years.
Someone was saying the most important person in the country right now is RBG's doctor.
Or her fiber intake, yeah.
Well, she is a picture of health. I think you have to also consider that people like Clarence Thomas may take this as an opportunity to go ahead and retire.
That's what they've been saying, that he's the next one to retire.
That's right.
I hadn't even heard that.
Yeah. He's been saying, he actually said that prior to it being clear that Trump had a shot. So I think he must really feel that if he was just not necessarily doing with regard to who will be president, just on his own health and concerns.
Well, Rich, one of my questions that I have, you know, a lot of people watched 60 Minutes last night, and he said that he would not contest the gay marriage that was decided on by the Supreme Court. But that why wouldn't that also account for Roe v. Wade, since the Supreme Court has already judged on that?
Yeah, good question. that all of us had right with after seeing his interview, and I mean, not totally surprising. It's certainly a lot less controversial, and I think most Republicans will leave same-sex marriage alone, but Roe v. Wade is sort of red meat to the base, and I don't think it's as easy for him to drop that as it would be for same-sex marriage. And I mean, to his point, same-sex marriage has been decided by the Supreme Court, so that's not an issue. Roe v. Wade, on the other hand, was decided 30 plus years ago, and since then has been eroded consistently with some Supreme Court decisions. So it's a lot easier for him to say, and a lot less difficult for him to say that it's okay for the Supreme Court to knock down Roe v. Wade, or at least, as he said, leave it to the states. Now, he, didn't have a problem saying that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, then women would have to travel to, states that would allow women the right to choose, which, seems very, a pretty big roadblock in terms of abortion. But in any case, you're right. I mean, why would you defer to the Supreme Court in one but not the other?
Right. Well, because it's more, like you said, more of an attention grabber. We have to run. Rich Linkoff, I want to thank you for joining us so late. I know it's been a while. It's been kind of hectic. There's this World Series thing that happened and then the election.
Yeah.
So let's not be strangers.
Minor event.
Hell is legitimately frozen over.
So many things are happening. Rich, have a great weekend. Everybody should go to WGNplus.com to hear Legal Face Off with Rich Linkoff and Jason Whiteside. Rich, have a great evening.
Have a good evening, Rich.
Thanks, Patty. You too.
Thank you.
Rich.
More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, trying not to make a mess in here because we are in Nick D's studio. I know it's technically Studio A, but I think of it as Nick D's studio. So I'm trying to, I've moved, but there have been hosts in here all day. They're redecorating downstairs. And so I'm hoping that these monitors are not entirely my fault as to where they are. Joining me in studio is Paul Farvar. He's a comedian and an attorney. Also joining us in studio is Todd Belcourt. He is the executive director of a non-profit organization called Social Change. He's also a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago Law School. And we've been talking about the Supreme Court. First, let's go with the Supreme Court. I have a pair of tickets to give. We have a prize. We have a contest for you right now. We want to know who you would put on the Supreme Court. It can be anybody. 312-981. Yes, Paul?
Can I say who I'd put?
Hold on. Let me give the rest of the number out. 312-981-7200. And I have a pair of tickets. We have a bunch of prizes. We're going to give a prize to somebody on the text screen. And we'll also give a prize to a listener who gives us a Supreme Court justice. And why? And we're going to take that list, and we're gonna vote amongst ourselves, and appoint your justice to the imaginary Supreme Court. But we have a pair of tickets to see Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer the musical, and that's going to be at the Chicago Theater. Paul Farvar also has a pair of tickets to the Laugh Factory for Saturday night's show. We have a couple other things. We've got prizes all around for people who will participate in this. Paul, do you want to tell us what your idea is, or do you want me to take Mark first?
Let's see what Mark goes.
Let's see what Mark goes with. Mark, how are you doing? Hi, Mark. You have to turn your radio down, though. Mark from the 414. Hey, Mark. Mark. Maybe he's going over to turn the radio down. He didn't realize we were going to get to his call.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well.
How are you, Mark?
Hello, hello.
Hello. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I love that you're calling. What? Who's your justice idea?
Barack Obama. I say Barack because I listen to sometimes the BBC, but Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Interesting. What are the chances? And why would you want Barack Obama on the Supreme Court?
Well, he has a legal background. He knows government inside and out. He would represent a myriad of different sections of the country and sectors of the populace.
I like this idea. Paul, had you thought of that?
No.
But, no.
But I think if he did that, this country would be united. The protests would stop right away.
I agree. I think he's absolutely spot on.
Ooh.
But I don't think, does he want to be a Supreme Court justice so soon? He wants to, relax for a couple
of
years.
I think he probably wants a little time to tell some
if
speeches.
If he was offered it, I bet he'd take it.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful suggestion, though.
Yeah, I like his.
And it would
so
be unique.
So far, he's in first place in the options.
Has there ever been a president appointed to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, Taft, right?
Yeah. Oh, not in the company.
First Lady Michelle Obama would look great at all the functions and everything else.
What about Michelle Obama as a Supreme Court justice?
I'd go for her, too.
Todd just went, what?
Well, I was waiting to see when he said I'd go for her. That just had so many different things going on in my mind.
As a Supreme Court justice, she would be great.
I mean, respectfully.
Yes. No, I thought so.
We know, Mark. We're playful, Mark. Sorry,
yes,
Mark.
We're just teasing. I think that that's an excellent idea. Interesting. What are the chances?
I think she'll be more likely to take the Hillary Clinton route and run for a local office. And mm-hmm. then maybe,
build from there?
Yeah.
Interesting. Let's see what Ryan thinks. Ryan, who do you think should be on the Supreme Court?
Sheriff Clark.
That's out of
Arizona.
Oh, really? The one that was just, voted out of
Milwaukee. Milwaukee County.
Oh.
Milwaukee.
Sheriff Joe.
They're very different.
Yeah. Sheriff Joe in Arizona is who I was thinking of.
Talk a little bit
about Sheriff Clark.
Yeah, tell us about Sheriff Clark.
Well, he'd bring a law enforcement perspective and back police again, which is needed in this country.
Okay. Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for someone who has familiarity with law enforcement. Has there ever been law enforcement on the Supreme Court that you know of? I mean, that's an interesting idea to take boots on the ground and put them on the court. Right? I mean, that's where a lot of the laws are.
No, absolutely. I mean, people are very front and center where the law meets the public. There's no better example of that than the police. And I think in terms of national reputation, he's considered a very reasonable sheriff who understands the perspective of both the community and the law enforcement.
I like it. Well, so far we have two. We have Ryan on the line, whose justice idea is Sheriff Clark out of Milwaukee, and Mark, who would like to see Barack Obama, or thinks that Barack Obama would be an excellent Supreme Court justice. 312-981-7200. We have some prizes on the line for our favorite choice of these amongst these options. Paul, who is your idea for? By the way, 312-981-7200. To play who should be a justice. I don't know. What's name that justice. Give us a judge.
Well, I think someone in the music industry would be good to just bring some happiness. I don't know. I was going to say Bruce Springsteen, but I don't.
To be a judge.
I don't think he's going to win with the other two choices people picked.
Barack Obama and Sheriff Clark. Interesting.
Maybe... I don't know. Who else is there?
Todd, do you have any ideas?
Lionel Richie? No.
Hello. sorry, awful voice, but great song. And speaking of songs, we need to really add a little more flavor to your playlist while we're talking about it.
I will have to figure
but
it out.
But, you know, in the serious note, I would love Ann Williams. We had never had an African-American woman have the privilege of serving the Supreme Court, and she's from the Seventh Circuit. She's local, and she has an incredible record. But in a playful note, I think it'd be great to have someone who can bring a little levity to the court. So whether it be someone like an Al Franken or like our very own attorney in stock here who has both real life experience, actual legal experience, but also can bring a little levity during this time of duress where people on all sides could use a break.
Yeah, I'd take if Trump wants to nominate me, I'd take it. Oh. If he wants.
Well, make sure you get through your
hat
in the ring.
That's a lot of work, though.
That
huh?
is a lot of work.
You gotta wake up early.
He's a martyr, I tell
you.
Oh,
you gotta wake up all the time.
He's taking it for the team.
Michael, who's your idea for a Supreme Court justice?
Well, I'd actually like to go with Giuliani.
Giuliani, okay. But I think...
He's got a legal background. He represented New York, which has got a pretty eclectic mix of citizens. And
I would say of anyone I've heard, he would be the closest to a Justice Scalia that would be out there, don't you think?
Well, that's hopefully what we would get. I mean, I think we need to stay along those lines. I think the conservative approach is more in line with the Constitution than the liberal approach, but just personal opinion.
Todd, what do you think about that?
No, I'm listening. You haven't finished your question, though.
The idea that conservative judges are more in line with the Constitution than a liberal judge.
Well, I think it just depends on how you view the way the Constitution is supposed to be interpreted. I think this is kind of an age-old debate of whether or not we're supposed to put ourselves in the shoes of the founders when they put it together, or we expected that they contemplated when they put the Constitution together this would be a document that evolves based on the common needs of the common people. So I think those are two different understandings, and every time you have a conversation about that, people have legitimate perspectives, and I think generally the conservative folks are the ones who think we should make decisions based on the mindset of those, 200 years ago, and I happen to believe that, they would never have known about cell phones, airplanes, all the different things we have to contemplate.
Or black people being free or women voting.
Or Snapchat.
But that being said, I mean, there's still different ways you can satisfy both. And I think you've got someone like a Justice Roberts. He does try to make sure he's not ignoring the strict interpretation of the Constitution, but he's also allowing for the fact for the evolution based on the facts that are before him.
Interesting. All right. That sounds very balanced conversation to me. So Michael's idea is for Rudy Giuliani to be a Supreme Court justice. I'm trying to figure out how to put him on hold.
Someone say Dave Chappelle yet?
No, no one has said Dave Chappelle yet. Let's see what Julia thinks. Julia, who's your idea for Supreme Court justice?
Julia.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
So I want to say Michael Savage. He's a radio talk show host. And the reason I say him because...
Wasn't he on Wonder Years? He was pretty good in that.
No, that's Fred Savage.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Michael Savage.
Who also would be a good...
Hey, she's a radio show host. I'm all in. Go ahead, Julia. Continue.
The reason is because he's not afraid to speak up for the truth. And I feel like... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Absolutely. We're just listening.
Yeah, we're listening.
Yeah, so someone in the Supreme Court, Justice, I feel like can't be pressured by, like, what other people think. Like, sometimes you have to do what's right. And he's not afraid to speak his mind and, like, stand up for, like, moral values and for justice. And I think it's important. I think we need someone like that that's not afraid of being pressured for votes and, you know, for their own personal interests. We need someone that's going to look out for everybody.
Interesting. Interesting idea. So Michael Savage. So far we have, by the way, our caller who recommended Rudy Giuliani has left the phone. I don't know. I guess he decided that he would back out. Not that it was, you weren't out of the running, my friend.
He's in the top 10.
You were definitely in the top 10. But we, so far we have Mark has nominated Barack Obama. Ryan has nominated Sheriff Clark of the Milwaukee Police Department or Sheriff's Department. Julia has nominated radio host Michael Savage. I see nothing wrong with that idea of having a radio host as a Supreme Court justice. Also, from the 224, I'd appoint Theo Epstein because he can do anything, even give us a reason to smile, despite the carnage of last week. Let's go Cubbies. And the 630, 815 says David Duke, because he'd have to wear a black robe.
I get it.
I see where you're coming from there. But the 630 has my vote because they have nominated Judge Judy.
No way.
That was my pick as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and vote. We have Mark with Barack Obama. We have Ryan with Sheriff Clark, and we have Julia with Michael Savage. We'll pick a winner separately from the text line. So which one would you pick, Paul?
I think I'm going to go with Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Todd?
Yeah, you know, I actually appreciate the novelty of Sheriff Clark. And Savage, as I was looking him up, he does have some interesting perspectives. But I've got to go with our standing President of the United States.
So that would be Barack Obama. Esmeralda, did you have a chance to hear your choices? I apologize for not giving you a heads up.
I like Judge Judy.
Judge Judy.
She's no nonsense.
Well, that's two votes for Judge Judy on the text line.
I know she's on the text line.
No, they're gonna get prizes too. That's the text line. So Judge Judy already has two votes. But your choices from the phone lines are Barack Obama, President Obama, Sheriff Clark of the Milwaukee Sheriff's Department, I believe, and Julia wants Michael Savage, radio host Michael Savage.
No one said Lionel Richie.
No one said Lionel Richie. You're out of the running, sir.
Wait, is Michael Savage, is he the, he does Savage Love?
Yes.
Oh, then yeah, him. Is it Savage? He's wonderful.
Wait,
hold on, let me make sure. Let me see. Julia, is it Savage Love? Is that the radio show he has?
He's on WLS 890.
Oh, okay. So hold on one second. So Michael Savage, I don't know that it is Savage Love.
Oh, no, it's not.
Okay. So Michael.
I don't know who that is. President Barack Obama.
So we have three for President Obama and one for Sheriff Clark from me. I don't know if Craig had a chance to vote. Would you like to vote for the Supreme Court Justice per WGN Radio Pretty Late?
I'd love to vote, and I have to say that one of the best nominations was for Paul Farvar. I think that was a really good
call. Paul Farvar gets a vote. So thanks, there we
Craig.
Go.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm changing my vote.
Yeah.
To yourself.
I know that Todd can't win a prize, but
take one away.
I think he's going to do a good job.
This is one here. So we still have.
That means Paul got two votes.
President Obama. That would be for Mark. Mark, you have won. By the way, Mark, are you available to come down to Chicago to see, or do you live in the Chicagoland area? Hold on a second.
I live in Milwaukee, but I can go down to Chicago, so I'm very familiar with Sheriff Clark.
Oh. So, well, you have won a pair of tickets to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the musical, soaring off the screen and onto the stage at the Chicago Theater. Tickets are on sale now from November 17th to the 20th. And we'll take your name. Craig will get your information, and it will be available at Will Call.
Thank you so much.
The November 17th show. Absolutely. Have a great night. And by the way, Julia didn't need to hang up. I should have told her that we might have a prize for her as well. And Ryan, let's see. Ryan, with your idea of Sheriff Clark, you came in second. Would you like a pair of tickets to the Brew Lights at Lincoln Park Zoo?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Hold on the line, and we do have a pair of tickets to the Brew Lights at Lincoln Park Zoo on Thursday, December 5th. Specialty brews will be available from 12 breweries under festive holiday lights. Early bird tickets are on sale now through November 11th at lpzoo.org/brewlights. Let's take a break here. And I have a prize to give away for our texters as well. So for the Judge Judy. By the way, I didn't take all your votes. I feel like I just did a momocracy moment right there where I unilaterally decided it would be.
That's
listener.
What it felt like to me, too.
630.
I only did people just change their votes willy-nilly.
Your choices are Theo Epstein, Judge Judy, and David Duke.
And someone said Paul Farber, right?
Not on the text line. They did not. You that was on the air.
I think Justice Judy sounds cool.
Well, no, that was one of the three available, though.
I'm trying to see if I can trick candidate. You guys into thinking it was said. But
you
got
to go with Judge Judy.
Judge Judy has three votes. Esmeralda, that was right. You want to Judge Judy as well?
Yeah.
Paul?
I'm going to pick Paul Farber again.
Okay, so Judge Judy.
The
write-in candidate for Paul Farber.
Craig said it too. It's two.
Craig, would you like to vote once again for yes? He's going to write you in as well. And Judge Judy wins for the unnamed call, unnamed texter from the 630. And we also, let's see, what do I have left? I have a bunch of things to give away. Oh, let's give the texter from the 630 a desktop sports-themed artificial Christmas tree of your choice with white micro lights from Treetime Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington or Treetime.com. We need to get your email address, and Craig will get that information from you on the text screen. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour. He is the executive director of the non-for-profit organization Social Change and a lecturer of law at the University of Chicago Law School. Paul Farber, comedian, also an attorney. I want to talk a little bit about laws in the state of Illinois. And I was thinking about this tonight when I started doing some research because friends of mine who are in the LGBTQ community are concerned about gay marriage. They're concerned about Vice President-elect Mike Pence and his history of advocating for conversion therapy. So two things that we've learned in the last 2 days. One is that President-elect Donald Trump has said he will not challenge gay marriage with the Supreme Court. They've already ruled. And in the state of Illinois, gay marriage has been legal. There are many states across the country that had already decided on gay marriage. The other thing is the state of Illinois also has a ban on conversion therapy. So there are things that we can do. And that was something Governor Rauner actually also signed. And for people who are not familiar with conversion therapy, this is a treatment that parents might bring their children to a psychotherapist, some sort of therapist, and say, I want my child to not be gay anymore. And they use different techniques to basically therapize the gay out of them. And it can be, and there are extreme cases where it's almost torturous, to the point of torture, to a young person who, whether it's psychological or physical, as a matter of fact. So it is banned in the state of Illinois. Whether or not people go and try to choose their own routes, go through the churches that perhaps go outside of the medical field to try to convert somebody. That is banned in the state of Illinois for 18 and under, so you cannot you can't bring your child and presumably an adult if they want to be converted or can go through conversion therapy. That is their own choice. So I'm wondering, because I was doing research on that, are there other things that the state of Illinois can do, Todd, or other states throughout the country? If there are things that people are concerned about going forward, be involved and know what the laws are. What kinds of things can people do to make sure are protected in the state of Illinois?
I think you hit it on the head earlier when you said, while people are mad, it's important to channel that anger into actually being engaged and using that frustration and that extra energy to really build a coalition of like-minded people and people who don't agree with you and just have a conversation about what needs to be done to move our state, our country forward. So I think no matter what side of the aisle you are in this election, people responded to the notion that they felt that they weren't being listened to.
Right. So this is not for people who are upset about Hillary Clinton. This is for everyone to be engaged.
That's right.
Because this election, everybody was angry.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was angry. So spend some time when the dust settles, do research, find out who your legislators are. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's exactly right. And I mean, there's no question that there's a lot of things that Trump said that may be just pure bluster in the process of building support and making sure he's maintaining his the kind of frenzied level of energy and of his actual election effort. But there's also a legitimate reason to believe he's going to be a law and order president. And historically, that means of ratcheting up of penalties relating to criminal offenses and putting more pressure on community members who are already being mistreated by law enforcement to some extent to overcome even more hurdles. So in preparation for that, I've prepared a legislative agenda to make sure that we're taking into account the discrimination that takes place after people have interactions with law enforcement, but also on the front end, making sure only the people who need to be arrested and convicted in the first place are the ones who are going through these prisons and jails. And then, of course, on the very front end, before that even takes place, make sure that law enforcement officials are acting with the professionalism as they should. The majority of them are heroes, but let's make sure the ones who are make us forget that they're heroes are the ones who are no longer getting away with things.
And you say that both as an attorney, as someone who fights for social justice, and as a family member of many people who are in law enforcement.
That's right. I have two brothers and a cousin who are police officers. And so I am one of the rare intersection of people who are Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. And I think the answer to it is just really common sense policy to make sure that violence and lethal force is only used in extreme instances and making sure that's really clear cut guidance on what that looks like and when it's even allowable. But more importantly, we have to really stress the civil interaction between community and police in the first place, because things start to escalate when there's a feeling of disrespect on one side or the other. And to the extent that you can stop that before it even begins, then you can really stop a lot of the violence on the back end.
And that's really what we want, is we want safe neighborhoods, you know, and we've been talking a lot about how people want to know that there are jobs. They want to know that their kids are getting a good education. These are all things that are not Chicago versus Peoria. These are not things that are Indianapolis versus Muncie. These are not these are all things. This is everybody. We're all in the same game. We all want better for our families. We all want a better future. And I think that we need to keep having conversations. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour and Paul Farvar. And we've been talking a little bit about the topics that are coming up as Donald Trump prepares for his transition team. I want to read a little bit of an article that was written in the Daily Beast by Ronald Rodosh, who ran into a gentleman named Steve Bannon, who was the executive director of Breitbart.com, who became the chief executive of the Trump campaign. And today has been announced, or yesterday, I believe it was announced, that he would be the chief advisor. Is that correct, Todd Belcour?
That's right.
I'm sorry, let me get that one.
That's right.
That's right. So this writer ran into him at an event in 2000, I believe. My phone just froze up. Basically saying that Steve Bannon sees himself as a Leninist. He wants to blow up all the institutions of government. He was instrumental in the Tea Party, in developing that and running candidates, driving candidates that did not agree with his platform out of office. And so today he is possibly the chief advisor to the president of the United States.
It's an anarchist, maybe?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, the base qualification should be loving the country enough to make sure it succeeds. And when you decay the government from within, that does nothing but a disservice to the American people. So it's hard for us to be here and actually even give this audience the fact that he's honestly considering it and people are allowing it is a big issue.
I don't think he's considering it. He announced that he's named him his chief advisor. Here's what Steve Bannon, the new chief advisor to the president of the United States, has said. Lenin, he answered, wanted to destroy the state, and that's my goal too. So that's just thought the people.
When did he say that?
Hold on a second. Let me scroll down to this this encounter. I am just this and this art. This article has been available for a while. This is not a new article. It was written in August of this year, and this writer. Once again, I feel badly because it was 2014. They were at a book party held at Capitol Hill at Steve Bannon's townhouse in early 2014, and again he said he wants to destroy the institution of government.
He's definitely scary, but and chief advisor but it could have been chief of staff, which was more scary.
Mm-hmm.
But he picked the right reint priebus for that. So.
Right. This is what Bannon wants to do. I want to bring everything crashing down and destroy all of today's establishment. Bannon was employing Lenin's strategy for Tea Party populist goals. He included in that group the Republican and Democratic parties, as well as the traditional conservative press. By the way, Bannon was contacted about this and said that I have nothing further to say on the topic. But just, I mean, this is something that we don't pay attention to, the people that were behind the scenes, and not just the Trump campaign, but also the Tea Party. I think the people, well, look, we are all often manipulated when it comes, whether it's in the media or the conversations that we choose. You know, we have our own circle of friends on Facebook, so we'll keep seeing the same things over and over again.
Well, there's people that were, you know, warning about the dangerousness of what he said, and people of America didn't care.
Right, so. And this is what the 630 says. It really bothers me that Trump has appointed Bannon, and I also heard this evening that he is strongly considering Giuliani for Secretary of State. If it's about who he appoints, he has a very small pool of his own to choose from. He should widen his pool because all these people were part of his divisive campaign. But if his campaign won, why would he change now? I mean, he never promised to be nicer after the election.
But he has a desire to be liked. I mean, ultimately.
But maybe. But what is it? What is the ultimate form of being liked? When other than winning a presidency, he's that sort of is a stamp of approval. Okay, I did everything right. I'll keep doing that.
Well,
because
kind of. It's not like he won with a mandate. I mean, he right. didn't win the popular vote.
But does he care?
He thinks he has a mandate.
But I think the bottom line
yes,
is
they do.
Regardless of what you know, particular percentage you win by, you just have a basic duty as president to be collegial, compassionate, and show your service for the American people by being reasonable.
Right.
And if you just go my way or the highway all the way your entire tenure, that's what we call dictatorship. So I think the very important thing that he has to realize, and I think he's already shown signs that he's willing to take some steps in this direction, even though Bannon's a bad example, that he is willing to listen to outside counsel to make sure he's making the most prudent steps, given the constraints that he's already put himself in within his campaign promises and beyond.
Right. I mean, I think he relies on his family a lot, and some of his daughter seems pretty reasonable from listening to her talk and whatever their relationship is. He does rely upon her a lot, and I think you know the more you go, the more I've kind of calmed down a little as I've let this sink in that he's the president-elect is. You know, he has, what is his motives here? I know obviously he has a motivation for power, but ultimately he has to have some desire to want to make America great again, whatever
right.
that means. And I think he has a desire to be liked. And, you know,
you've said that a lot.
I do think that. I think that he has this narcissism. And, you know, you look at the reality shows, he wanted to win. Obviously, that was his only goal. And I think if you watch after the election, he was the only person that was surprised. I mean, if you look at his face and all these things, it's sinking in. And it's like the movie The Candidate. I don't know if I'm aging myself, but that's a movie with Robert Redford where their goal was to win. And then they win and they just look at each other. Now what?
Right.
And that's
what
I feel like he's done. And now, I mean, there's articles about him, you know, where he wants to be liked. And I think maybe some of the stuff he's saying now or doing now is to be, you know, he wants to have a legacy as this great president. And if you think like he thinks, which is really hard to do for me, but maybe there's something there that he wants to go down in history as a
likable president?
As better than Barack. I mean, he definitely has a vendetta that he wants to, you know, who knows?
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, I think he has right now the unique position where he could propose legislation that could really be life-changing for a lot of people and a lot of communities that have been opportunity-starved for a long time, really change the educational structure for this, a lot of people in our country, really provide a lot of job opportunities in such a way. And he could propose the very same things that Barack Obama proposed, but since it's Donald Trump proposing it, people already assume it's coming through a conservative lens, and
right.
he'll get the benefit of the doubt, and it'll get through Congress.
That's
so
true.
So he happens, regardless of the Constitution, the actual composition of Congress, he has more support just by virtue of the fact that he has an R next to his name.
Right.
Right.
And so I think, I was talking to someone about the first 100 days, a third of his proposals sound like stuff that came from a Bernie Sanders.
With college
sort of,
stuff, yeah.
Absolutely, a Bernie Sanders policy profile. and a third just, you know, pro-business general Republican, lower taxes. But he's also doing some other things like taking care of some of the loopholes and bring some of the money back, a lot of things that are also being talked about by Hillary. So the things that really stand out the most that maybe give some cause for concern are the way he anticipates changing the laws and making sure that people who are here and are undocumented now have to have certain fear that they're going to be sought after and rounded up and in no uncertain terms. And I think that's a really legitimate reason for people to be concerned, and one of many reasons why people are protesting and being as active as they can to voice their opposition.
But if you look at just that, the immigration thing, one thing to think about, because he is a business person, is how the undocumented people leaving this country is going to affect business, not only in terms of the workforce, but housing. There's a lot of houses that are owned by undocumented immigrants who are now, you're going to have what? He says 2 to 3 million people. Let's just say there's housing that is owned by these people that are now going to be empty. That's going to crash the housing
market.
Well,
I hadn't even thought of that.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't think there's a legitimate business
case.
I'm
really smart sometimes. This is why I should be Justice Farvar. I want to go back. Craig already nominated.
Yes.
I second. So, no, I mean.
And wrote you in even. We weren't even on the.
But if you think about it, Trump is ultimately, if he has any core, it's business. And if he thinks this out and sees how it's going to affect the bottom line in business, which is his base, if for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. maybe some of these things aren't going to make sense for him.
Maybe. But I think based on what he's already reflected in writing within the first 100 days, I think you're right. There's no business case that could be made that really justifies putting a lot of resources into manually taking people out of the country mm-hmm. who want to be here and working here and supporting the economy. But I think in terms of his own belief system, he does believe that he owes the people who voted for him
right.
some of the red meat that he promised in the course of the election. I think in his mind, that's the low-hanging fruit as it relates to that.
But the thing is where he says, you know, 2 to 3 million documented, like people aren't going to call him out if it's only, you know, 10,000 people. And those are the 10,000 that are these, you know, people who are gangsters, as he said, or felons,
right.
you know, and quite frankly, mm-hmm. if that's true, that there are these people that are in this country and they are undocumented and they've are convicted of felonies, maybe it is better to have them out of the country and instead of our prison system, which also affects the prison system being overpopulated.
What do you think?
Yeah, but I think what that does is ignores the fact that that's already being done. President Obama was already doing that at a precipitous pace. In fact, he's actually deported more.
But nobody in his 20% of the population who hates Barack Obama appreciates that.
Not just appreciate that, but they also don't know that. I mean, that's been the problem of the Obama administration is not getting the message out of what has been accomplished and the things that weren't accomplished. Why? I think that he's been he's been terrible
Absolutely.
At getting out the word as to what they were doing, what they were accomplishing, and where the wall of no was.
Too humble. But here's the thing.
And willing to work with other people. And you know what? Torch the earth, my friends.
but the thing is that matters is ultimately whether Trump gets credit for it and whether it was something that Barack Obama was already doing. Ultimately, for the people who are afraid, why does it matter? If they're saying, oh, we're going to be stricter on who comes into this country as immigration mm-hmm. immigrants, and they're going to make it really tough. And you look at the test and it's identical to the test that was done for years under Barack Obama. I mean, yeah. We can yell all we want, like, well, that's what was already happening. But if that's all he does and nothing really changes in the status quo of what was under Barack Obama.
But if he gets a message out that he did and whatever the numbers are, he can. I mean, that's the thing is it's all about the message
on that.
Anthony, what did you want to say?
It's a reality show.
That's right. Anthony. What
hello. Good evening, everybody.
Hey,
listening
Anthony.
To the comments on immigration. Here's a novel idea. Why don't we just have the same immigration laws and treat illegals here the same way Mexico treats our illegals there?
Is anyone familiar
I think that
with
would
how
be
we,
probably the well. If you're caught in Mexico, you are immediately arrested, fined, and deported. There's no sanctuary cities. There's no ACLU lawyer coming to help you out. There's no government subsidies. There's nothing. You're kicked out.
Well, I think the reason why we treat people who are here without paperwork differently is because we're supposed to be the beacon of hope for the world. So we're supposed to be the example for other countries to emulate. And if people
there's a fine line between being nice to somebody and being taken advantage of. I kind of like to know if somebody coming into the country, A, has a criminal record, medical or mental conditions,
absolutely,
the ability to support themselves. And there's no way to know this when they just come across without any vetting or investigation into who they are. That's the whole point of having an immigration department, is to have an idea of who you're letting in.
You're right.
I mean we let in people from Mexico every year through the legal channels. It's not like we don't allow Mexicans to come here to live.
Yes, I hope you're not misinterpreting what we're saying, is we're encouraging people to come here without going the proper channels. I think the point is, for the people who have been here, who have set up roots here, who have, you know, 15, 20 years here, I think it's clear based on their conduct that if we consider them and have run in with them now, that we should not treat them the same way as someone who's, you know, muling drugs across the line and now intending to distribute them on a wide basis. So I think that's the issue, that I'm not sure if Trump is making that same distinction, and that's what concerns me. And you think about things also like they have for Obama now with Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, otherwise called DACA. Trump is talking about disbanding that. And what that really does is allow for kids who, by no control of their own, are brought here by their parents and then grow up here, and then in the process of growing up are stopped or detained by police or immigration authorities. Right now, there's a process to allow them to stay, to make sure to stay with their family and have an opportunity to prove that they intend to be in this country and mean well by this country. But if Trump is able to dismantle this, as he plans to, through executive order, that means these kids who are brought here not by their own choice will now have to be ripped from their families and be taken back and have maybe no place to go. And I think that's an example of something that we should be leading by example as a country, and things we shouldn't be supporting.
Thank you so much for calling, Anthony. We've got to take a break here, and we'll wrap up the show in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Tell me something.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Todd Belcour, who is the executive director of the nonprofit organization Social Change and a lecturer of law at the University of Chicago Law School. Also joining us is Paul Farvar. His podcast, Singles Only, is up that we just did recently, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got you and I did one with Rebecca Halperin, who's a TV producer in L.A. And it was pretty fun.
It was very fun. Did you enjoy that one?
Yeah, I liked that one.
It turned out very well. Todd, hold on a second. Yes?
Don't forget, that's Judge Paul Farvar to you.
Justice Farvar, F-A-R-A-H-V-A-R, Esquire.
Right.
Excellent. Let me talk to Esmeralda for a minute, because I haven't had a chance to really check in with her except to see which judge she wanted. She and I both agreed on Judge Judy. How have you been, Esmeralda?
I've been good.
Excellent. I miss you all weekend.
Aww. We're right. We're so much closer now.
I know. This is so.
You're in studio.
I know. I always get self-conscious because I know I've got to get out of the way quickly when Nick gets in here, because he's got to. I mean, you know, I'm the same way. People turn the screens in different directions, and it's all it's disorienting. So I got to get out of the way. Todd, do you have anything good to tell us? Tell us something good before we go.
It's a brand new day. Let's all use our energy to fight for the good fight, and not get so frustrated that we render ourselves immobile.
All right. Don't be immobile, Paul.
I'm going to just be a lot more shallow and say I get to open for one of my favorite comedians, Gary Gulman, mm-hmm. on Thursday at Lincoln Hall.
Excellent.
I'm really, really excited for that.
It's wonderful.
Very cool. But, oh, by the way, I have this to read. Spread a little holiday joy this year with the best personalized holiday gifts. The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendar is now available in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This is the ninth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and you'll see striking new color technology on all 12 monthly images for 2017. These unique calendars not only feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of our spectacular photography, but the images are crafted so your name is actually in the photograph. Give a gift that is completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the feature section. Make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2017 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2K Chicago calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com.